DeSanto Propane is four generations strong as a trustworthy family-owned business with unmatched customer service. Go online at DeSantoPropane.com for more info or call toll-free at 1-800-752-4574. Since 1937, the difference has been DeSanto Propane. For FingerLakes1.com, I'm Josh Durso, and this is Inside the FLX. It's time for our monthly check-in with Cuyahoga County Sheriff Brian Skank. Sheriff, thanks for being here. Let's start with the overdose report that came out from 2023. The data is now official. When you look back at that and look back at 2023 as a whole from your office's perspective, what stands out to you?
Well, what stood out to me is we've seen a drop in the number of overdoses, both fatal and non-fatal. When we look through the years from 2019 on, we saw an increase in 2019 through 2021 and a slight decrease in 2022 and a significant decrease in 2023, which is good news. But unfortunately, we still logged 163 overdoses throughout the year and seven fatalities. And we're going to keep working to reduce that number even further. But something else that's popping out to me that we're, you know, we don't pay a lot of attention to, but we need to, is when you look at the fatal overdoses and the percentage of them that involve opioids, we're seeing a drop in that number, that percentage as well. And what that's telling me is that, you know, other drugs that are being used beyond opioids are being used, and there's fentanyl in those drugs. And I'm concerned that individuals using those substances don't realize that fentanyl's in them. You know, if you're using heroin or an opioid, you know, you certainly would suspect that individuals would know there's a risk of that. But when you're using other synthetic drugs or cocaine or even marijuana, and fentanyl's popping up in that, that's very concerning to me that individuals may be using those substances without that knowledge of how close they, you know, they're coming to dying or actually dying in those fatalities. So very concerning.
When I'm curious, because it seems like it would probably be something that would be a little tough to flesh out in data, but I'm sure it's something you're seeing on a pretty consistent basis at this point. Talk to us a little bit about that increase of fentanyl appearing in other drugs over the last 5 to 10 years, because it does seem like something that, while much more frequent now, wasn't really as much of an issue 5 or 10 years ago.
It wasn't, and we are seeing that pop up in all kinds of different drugs now. And I think, you know, individuals that are selling these drugs or supplying these drugs at a higher level, unfortunately, are cutting them or putting fentanyl in these drugs to make them much more potent and much more highly sought after, much more addictive. You know, and for individuals that are recreationally using drugs that don't realize, you know, what could potentially be in them, then they're potentially fatal, extremely dangerous. So I think that people that use these drugs, any drugs recreationally, need to understand that it's not just heroin anymore and opioids that are killing you. It can be anything that could be laced with something. So very concerning. I think we need to work on that and, you know, do a better job in the year ahead, you know, educating individuals that could be recreationally using drugs to certainly stay away from them in the first place. But if they are using, understand the hazards, that there could be things in those drugs that they don't even realize.
How about your deputies? What other, what additional protocols, safety steps do you guys have to take to make sure that everyone's safe investigating various drug-related incidents?
We're very careful with any drug that we come in contact now, even more so than we used to in years past. But fentanyl can be extremely dangerous. It can be very hazardous if it's, you know, ingested accidentally, or, you know, if it gets on your hands and somehow, you know, makes contact with your eyes or your mouth, which certainly we do our best to avoid, but it can be very dangerous for law enforcement to have to handle these drugs. So, you know, if we suspect fentanyl's in anything that we come in contact with, we don't field test it. We just bag it up and then take special measures to test that in a controlled setting so that it doesn't impact or cause a hazard to our first responders and deputies.
So let's talk a little bit about an interesting program you sent along, the Yellow Dot Program. This seems really interesting. A bit of a proactive step that folks can take, I guess, to help first responders when they're actually on the scene, right?
It is. I love this program. It's just so simple. It's free. It just makes sense. I think everybody should take advantage of this. But the Yellow Dot program is a program that's really spearheaded by our New York State Sheriff's Association. And I support it 110%. And it consists of a little yellow dot sticker that you would place on the left-hand side of your vehicle on a window. And what that does is it alerts first responders that if that sticker is on your vehicle, then in your glove box, you have a card that has useful information on it that could be used in the event of an emergency. If you're unable to communicate with first responders, whether it be after a car accident or a medical emergency or anything along those lines, information can be on that card relative to your medical needs, if you have any special needs, contact information, who to contact in an emergency, and other relevant pertinent information that could help in that situation. So it's a free program. We do have those cards here free at our office. Many sheriffs throughout New York State support the program, and we continually try to educate our first responders in Cuba County to be aware of what that yellow dot means if they come in contact with that. So I know recently in Chenango County, Sheriff Cutting had let me and some other sheriffs know that there was a success story in Chenango County recently with the Yellow Dot program. So it's free, it's easy, it's simple. I encourage everybody to get your cards and utilize those. And you can also utilize that at home. If you put that yellow dot on your front door of your home, it indicates that within your freezer wrapped up in a plastic bag will be that same card. So if you have any medical concerns that might be easily, you know, given to first responders in the event that you can't communicate with them, you can have those cards in your freezer as well. So really great program.
How important is that when it comes to just speeding up the availability of information for first responders from various different agencies that may be responding in a situation that could be life-threatening or maybe not necessarily life-threatening, but just nobody's around to give the information that's ultimately necessary?
Sometimes it's, you know, it comes down to seconds and minutes that count when in an emergency, especially, you know, if you're a diabetic or you have some other type of medical concern that, you know, if it takes minutes or, you know, it takes a long time for first responders to determine what the situation is, if we can cut that time, then it's going to certainly give you a much better shot at, you know, at coming out of that situation in a positive light. So it's really just a great idea to cut response times down when there's a medical emergency.
And of course, training conferences are happening. You were recently at one. What were some of the big issues that came up or what stood out to you after the most recent conference you were attended?
Sure. Last week, I attended the New York State Sheriff's annual winter training conference, and I believe that was the 49th year in a row that the New York State Sheriff's Association has hosted that conference. I went to Albany for it, and I joined about 45 other sheriffs from across the state at the conference for training and networking. And it's just a great conference every year to you know, stay up to speed with recent trends and to network with sheriffs and you know, see the great work that they're doing and learn from all of our partners out there. But one thing that really stood out at the last conference was the concern we have at the southern border. We did welcome Sheriff Kieran Donahue from Canyon County, Idaho, to our conference, and he spoke to us about Mexican cartels and some of the things going on at the border that are impacting public safety. And it really shed some new light on the fact that, you know, we've got some very dangerous individuals that are freely coming across our border. And we just spoke about fentanyl. There's a lot of fentanyl and other drugs that are coming across the border. We really need to work on securing the border and tightening that up, because it's certainly having negative impacts on public safety and on the health of our communities all the way, you know, as far as New York State, and not just the southern border. We're actually starting to see people crossing the northern border that are coming here, unfortunately, illegally and not going through the proper process. So we really have to start working on tightening those up. It's very concerning to me, you know, what's going on at these borders and the impacts it's having in a negative way for public safety.
How easy is it for folks to forget, because we are a bit insulated here in the Finger Lakes and central New York? We aren't necessarily right on a border. I would assume it's pretty easy to forget about the importance of some of these issues. When you think about public safety in a county like Cayuga, what stands out to you as priorities when it comes to advocating for that border security and making sure that drugs and other things aren't just flowing freely into the U.S.?
I think we do have that feeling that we're somewhat insulated, but there's no part of our country that is truly insulated. When you look at fentanyl that's coming across the border, that's winding up in our community, it's dangerous. People are dying. There's a lot of human trafficking that's going on in our communities everywhere across the country. And some of that originates in Mexico and other countries where they're taking advantage of our open border. So that's something we need to be concerned with. And something that I thought was staggering was at the conference, I learned that, the cartels, drug cartels and human smugglers in Mexico, they're making upwards of $310 billion a year by smuggling people across our border. And that's just an incredible number, disgusting number. We can't allow this to happen. We can't allow people to be victimized and come from other countries and be victimized as they come into our country while they're still trying to pay off debts to these cartels. And we have to do a much better job of tightening up the border and, not allowing this to happen in our communities.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the jail. Population trending downward, good, bad, indifferent. How do you interpret that data, which I'm sure fluctuates month to month?
It does fluctuate quite frequently. I will say last year, for the majority of the year, our population count held between 160 incarcerated individuals to about 175 for the year until we got to about November. And we've really seen a sharp decrease. And I believe this morning we're down to 105 incarcerated individuals. It's really dropped considerably. I think that's a good thing. I don't really have a good understanding as to why we're seeing such a sharp decrease, other than we haven't seen as many arrests in recent months. So I think that's a positive thing. As long as we aren't seeing crime trends trend up, I think, if we're not seeing an increase in arrests or a considerable number of arrests, I think that's good news. So hopefully that trend continues and we don't see crime trends go on the rise. But as of today, it looks like good news to me.
Is that a figure, the arrest figure or the jail population numbers, is that one that tends to decrease or perhaps hit its lowest during the winter up here in the Northeast and then perhaps, ramp up a little bit when the weather gets warmer?
What's interesting is, I did look last year, I believe it was January 16th of 2023, our population count was at 172. And today we're at 105. So that seems to be counter. It doesn't seem like there's a similarity there. And I know from experience in the past that we would tend to see our jail numbers increase a little bit during the cold months. And I think, the individuals that hate to say it, but individuals that didn't have a place to stay, would count on being in jail for the coldest of months, commit a crime, low-level crime or something that might land them here for a few months, and we would tend to see our numbers sometimes increase a little bit. So I don't really know why we're trending so low this year compared to last year. But again, I'm going to be working to try to get a grasp on why those numbers are where they are today and understand what's going on in our community as far as arrests and the incarcerated individuals go.
I'm curious, as the state legislative process gets going, anything in particular on the legislative front for law enforcing in New York that catches your eye or you'd like to see the legislature address this cycle?
Well, I know so far there's nothing over the top that like we've seen in the years past when we talk about bail reform, the HALT Act and some of those things. I think there's still some work that needs to be done to tweak those changes that we've seen over the last few years. But as far as new legislation coming out this year, it doesn't appear that there's anything that's really significant that I feel is going to have a major impact on public safety. But I hope that we can, I believe Governor Hochul, I believe that she's committed some resources and funding to address specific issues. I know across the state, we're seeing a huge increase in the number of stolen cars. A lot of juveniles are stealing cars. And at the conference, I believe DCJ asked the Department of Criminal Justice Services, gave us a figure. I believe that stolen cars had increased 67% across the state last year, those types of cases. So there are some things that need to be addressed. The state's supplying some funding to do that. But I think we still need to look at the HALT Act in our jails and do something different with that. I think bail reform needs to be tweaked a little bit. I understand the reason for it initially, but I think it went just a little too far. So if we could tweak some of those things, I think we still need to push to do that. I think we'll all be in a much better place.
Retail theft?
Retail theft is up significantly too. In our community, we've seen that a little bit, not to the level that they're seeing in some major cities, but retail theft is an issue. The governor spoke about supplying funding to help address retail theft networks across the state, and that is definitely an issue. But major crimes, violent crimes, I know those numbers are down, and that's good news, but we have to also work on those petty crimes as well.
Yeah. So let's finish here. A state report said the death of a 35-year-old inmate at the county jail in 2022 may have been preventable. That headline obviously came out about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Wanted to just give you the chance to talk a little bit about that. And then also any steps that may have been taken afterward. Obviously, a lot of time has passed since that incident actually happened in 2022. So I'm sure a ton has changed in the county jail, as it would over the course of any 2-year span. But if you could talk to us a little bit about that report and what your office does with that information when it comes out from a state agency like that.
Sure. So unfortunately, I believe it was Thanksgiving of 2022, we did have a suicide that occurred in our jail by an incarcerated individual. Anytime that there's a death in our facility, the New York State Commission of Correction will come in and investigate the situation and the circumstances surrounding that, which they did. And as you mentioned, they did put out a report with an opinion that they felt that there should have been some additional services. I can tell you that we do work closely with Cayuga County Mental Health. We have them embedded in our jail. They supply our mental health services here at the jail, so we rely on them to provide those services. Since that happened, and anytime something like that happens, we do take a very hard look, you know, at our facility and the services that we deliver, and we're always striving to improve upon them. But since that incident, we have been looking very closely at how we manage mental health, and we have brought in some additional services. We do have additional prescribers in our jail. We do have an additional social worker that's providing services in our jail. And we're also looking at adding some clerical staff to help with some of the clerical work surrounding our medical and mental health division. So, you know, offering this population mental health services and medical services can be very challenging in the environment that we're in. And, you know, our mental health challenges today, not just in our community, but within our jail, are very difficult to address. There's a great need out there, and I'm afraid that it's continuing to grow. But we'll continue to work with Cayuga County Mental Health and our community partners to address these issues to the best of our ability.
And you mentioned how those services have been enhanced over the last year and a half. Is this something that you anticipate to continue to have to, dedicate more and more resources, more manpower to over the next several years?
I think that it is. And what really concerns me, when you look at our local schools, when you look at our community, when you look at our jails and our prisons, I feel it's going to be very difficult to meet this need. I know that there's a shortage of social workers, therapists. All of these disciplines are having a hard time finding staff and meeting these needs. And, you know, I believe as we start to see our younger population coming out of schools that are struggling right now, there's a lot of kids in our schools that are struggling, and eventually they're going to be adults that are struggling. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, some of them could wind up in our jail facilities or in our community needing additional services. And we're going to have to really work hard in all of our communities to prepare for this need that's coming down the road. So I believe it is going to get more challenging and more difficult. So I think it's a priority that all of our government entities and our communities have to look at all levels. And I believe that the state's making some funding, quite a bit of funding available in the budget this year to address mental health at all levels. I think that's a good thing, but we need to make sure we're doing all we can to recruit good staff, therapists, and social workers and doctors to fill these voids that we're going to see in the years ahead.
Does it also contribute to the challenges that you guys see, or most sheriff's offices we see and hear about having trouble recruiting in the jail for corrections officer staff? Is that one of the pieces of feedback that you guys receive as far as, you know, folks who maybe would consider working as a corrections officer in a jail, but because of the very dynamic situation that they may be dealing with on a daily basis, they choose to go another direction?
It could be. I think it's a very challenging environment, whether you're working in the jail or you're a police officer or deputy on the road. It's challenging, but you know, I always say that it's very rewarding. It certainly is challenging, but it's always rewarding. And you have good days, you have bad days, but the best thing about the jobs that we do is they're different every day. So, you know, I think that anybody that looks at one of these careers and goes in a different direction, I would urge them to really get a good understanding of, you know, the job and what it looks like on a good day, because there are plenty of those. So, yeah, it could have some impact, but I don't think it should be something that should sway anybody from pursuing these careers.
Sheriff, as always, appreciate the time. Thanks for taking it today.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Josh. Have a good one.